Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to the good people behind Yelp Utah about the best sushi on the Wasatch Front. We hear some tunes from Tall Chalk Trio and Wildcat Strike, and we'll have Mike Riedel in to give us the latest local beer news. We are happy to welcome Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah, to the old Slug Soundwaves podcast, down here to our frosty underground lair, where we're going to delve into a subject that I certainly love myself, and it's certainly a burgeoning dining area, sushi. First, Jeffrey, welcome.
Thank you. It's frosty.
It's frosty. We're back from the holidays here, and, you know, I guess
I'm gonna
sushi,
scarf.
Any time of year is good for sushi in my book. I add a little more wasabi maybe in the winter and just hope it does something for me.
There are certain, wintertime is great, I think, for sketchy sushi, like sushi trucks.
Right.
I don't even know. Is the sushi truck still running
Frosty
around in Salt
trucks.
Lake?
I haven't
sushi
seen it in a while.
Sushi Groove?
Cruising Sushi.
With
yeah.
a Z.
Yeah. I haven't seen it lately, but I've been avoiding food trucks because I've been freezing my butt off for like
well,
2 months now.
Well, that's the thing is, winter is perfect for street food that you don't trust because their food is not going to spoil.
That's
you know
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah,
you
that's
see
right.
those
it's
reports.
Good to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Reports from the health department. They're like, food was above 60 degrees. Like, ha! It's never going to be above 20 degrees.
Not for months
degrees.
On end.
Yeah.
And, you know, sushi is definitely. We've covered sushi in the past. So, episode, was it 40, 41?
41. Back in 2012. You remember
Way
2012?
In those olden
don't
days.
You? Back when this used to be called Soundwaves from the Underground.
That's right. JP was, I think, the host with the most at the time, most likely then.
Indeed. Yeah, we talked about sushi back then, April 16th, for those of you Slug fans at home who want to go look it up
in
your library. Yeah, in the archive. It was episode 41, and we did talk about it before, and we're going to touch upon a few of those again today, just because you can't talk about sushi in Salt Lake City without talking about a few of these. But we're going to hit some new ones as well, both new in that they have recently opened and new in just that we didn't have time for last time.
And it is an amazing sort of type of cuisine that's really blossomed in Salt Lake over the years. They pop up right and left, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, I remember, in fact, if you want to go back and listen, I did, in fact, listen to that one today. At the time, I think I said there were 85 sushi places in the, not even the Wasatch Front. I think it was mostly Salt Lake Valley.
Okay.
Like, not even down into Utah County or up into Ogden area. And I think now I looked at, we're closer to 100.
Wow.
And some have closed, and obviously new ones have opened to get us to that number. So there are a ton in just about any neighborhood. So you really want to sift through and make sure that you're finding the good stuff because there's a difference.
There is a difference, right? Okay.
So first of all, let's talk about the granddaddy of sushi in Salt Lake City. Probably two places that get the most respect. I want to talk about Tekashi right here, 18 West Market. At the time when we talked about it a year or a couple years ago, they had 223 reviews on Yelp. They're at 372 reviews
wow.
now, and they have still maintained their 4.5 out of 5-star rating.
Wow.
So I'm not going to say much more than that, except that Tekashi, it's a little more new agey. I mean, just in the, like,
they try
more
some
about
funky
rolls
stuff,
and
right?
funky.
Yeah, they try some funky rolls. It's a cool vibe, really cool decor in there. For me, I'm always like, oh, I wish they were open for lunch on Saturdays. That's my only beef with Tekashi, is like, come on.
Yeah.
But it's awesome.
Yeah, and depending on the night, it can be a way to get in there. But,
absolutely. You can go next door to the bar. They'll ring you up when it's time for you to go in if you go to Christoph's next door.
There you have it. And then I also want to talk about Naked Fish right here in downtown. I give them mad love. Johnny's doing some amazing stuff there that more people need to know about. He really cares about fish and how the fish is broken down and bringing in clever and creative people and honoring the fish itself. It's a little less like fried rolls with cream cheese and more like, you know, really unique Japanese eye. Not just the sushi, although that's certainly the focus today, but really the whole menu about Japanese items.
Yeah, I've heard raves about the ramen there.
Yeah. Like. In fact, we can talk about ramen sometime. The ramen, did a little spoiler alert, if we do end up talking about ramen at some point, ramen has arrived in Salt Lake City. It's a food trend that was, it's been years in the making.
Love
it's
it.
Just starting to roll in.
Oh,
so
good
exciting.
To hear.
And they do, a lunchtime ramen? Maybe they have dinner ramen. I don't know. This is not a ramen.
I know. I took us on a tangent. I know.
Because I can talk about ramen, but we're not going to. Yeah. Naked Fish.
We'll save it.
67 West, 100 South, 169 reviews now, 4 stars. And then we talked about Kyoto also being very old school and traditional, 1080 East, 13 South. Check them out.
Yep.
Okay. So there was a few others that we talked about last time, which I want to just highlight. Sushi Express in, I think, officially, it's right on the edge. If it's not Sandy, it's, you know, right on the edge of Midvale, shooting into Sandy.
It's
right
in the Salt Lake 78, Valley.
78 South, 7th East. Ichiban has this location downtown, and the old church with the stained glass and the aquarium and all the things that are nice going on in there. Sapa, also very beautiful.
Yeah.
Inside and out. They have a patio, which will be great come spring.
Absolutely.
Sakana in the very south part of the valley. I haven't been there for a while. I know we talked about it last time. I don't have an update. Sorry. And then I think we also mentioned Sushi Groove up on the east side.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So that's old news, and they're all good, and I don't want to de-emphasize those at all, but maybe a couple that we can add to the fun. First
Love
of
it.
All, let's talk about Fat Fish.
I like the name already.
1980 West, 35th South. There's this whole like food thing going on right there, right? 35th South on the west side by 215.
I've had some good meals over in that neck of the woods myself.
Yeah, what do you have over there? You have,
I've actually had, there was a Mexican joint that I'm not sure if it lasted that was really traditional. No one spoke English. It was in an old like hamburger stand turned in. It was like Molcajete or the, had that thing going on. It was like, I'm not going to remember the name. Something 35. It had 35 in the name because it was on 35th and Redwood.
Yeah, there you go. yeah, but you had like Green Papaya was over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And remodeled.
That crustacean place.
Bucket of crawfish.
Bucket of crawfish over there.
Saigon Felicious. And Pho Saigon.
Yeah.
Two different
few
things.
Pho places.
Yeah, yeah. Pho Saigon moved and Saigon Felicious went into their old place and then Pho Saigon moved over across the way. You know, Noodle and Chopstick is over there. Anyway, but Fat Fish, 1980 West, 35th South, just fit 13 reviews right now. Same owners as Sapa. They do have Pho on the menu, so it's, you can do a few different things, but I hear good solid reports about the sushi, 4 out of 5 stars.
Nice.
And then a couple of places right over in Midvale that don't get a whole lot of love, but Nagoya, 1086 Fort Union Boulevard. I've eaten there years ago. 4 out of 5 stars, had 23 reviews. And then Teru Sushi, 1844 Fort Union, 4 out of 5 after 13 reviews. Just a pair of them over there.
Nice.
And then I think it's Akasaka Sushi. I follow them on Instagram, and they have posted some really like sexy pictures
of fish.
Yeah, and sushi.
Excellent.
They are 3.5 out of 5 after 23 reviews. That's 3011 East, 3300 South.
I love the fact that things like different ethnic foods are spreading themselves out kind of all across the valley these days, where it's, you know, you don't have to come downtown for this, or you don't have to go way out west to get that. It's pretty great. Amazing options.
I mean, I remember the first time I ever had sushi. It was on I was on Redondo Beach. like over the water, literally over the water.
Yeah.
On the pier, and my dad, I was in a choir tour because I sang in choir. Don't look at me like that. I sang in choir in high school.
Hey.
Dad went on choir tour with me, and like we kind of dared each other to eat sushi, and
nice.
It was like that was the vibe,
was
right? Like you dared people to.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this raw fish thing?
Yeah, people eat that.
Yeah, and now it's just huge and all over the place. My taste tends to go towards things that are a little more classic, like again, like the deep fried cream cheese stuffed.
Is not your
things,
thing? Or
is not my thing.
Right, yeah, I hear
you. It's not my thing. So I think that's why I love being able to look through and like see what other people have scouted, look at photos, and know like, okay, well, this place is, you know, clearly catering towards a much broader, let's call it a broader palate.
Right, right.
But we do have
somebody who just loves the really fine fish cuts and things like
sashimi,
that.
Sashimi, yeah, stuff like that.
Can I throw in a little what to Tona in Ogden? Just because when I grew up in Ogden, or went to high school in Ogden, there was no sushi to be had in Ogden back then. And so I never went to Tona for many years, even after it had opened. And it is fine sushi as well on Historic 25th Street. I was really impressed.
Yeah, you know what? I have never been to Tona, but I know a lot of folks, a lot of Yelpers up there. You know, pretty much when people say, singing hey, where should praise. I eat in Ogden? It's not just like, where do I go for sushi in Ogden? It's like, where do
go
I eat?
Go to Tona, yeah.
Yeah.
And they are a bit of that Tekashi vibe where they mix in some sort of funky, hipstery rolls and some things like that. But they have some good traditional stuff too. Really good. Anytime that a little town like Ogden can grow up a little bit like the Salt Lake Valley has, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I tell you, Tona, so Nate S., who is a real active Yelper who lived in Ogden, just moved down to Salt Lake. Anyway, Nate S. says this about Tona. He says, Tona has always done a brilliant job of walking the incredibly difficult line that is interesting, adventurous, authentic sushi in Ogden. That's why they have everything from deep fried rolls, and then he adds parenthetically, an unholy abomination, to special call lists for fresh uni and toro.
Oh, special call list. That's some service right there.
There you have it.
Well, the
there
first time it. I went there, which was just about a month ago, I met people from Bountiful who drove to Ogden to have sushi rather than come to Salt Lake for sushi because they love it so much. So, great options abound, and I'm sure give it 40 more episodes of the old podcast here, and there will
we'll be
40 new sushi joints out there for us to delve into, and
we'll be back.
It's a great thing. There's definitely advantage to having a good airport, you know? Get that seafood here
absolutely.
Fresh and ready to rock.
Absolutely, yep.
Jeffrey, where do we find you out there in the cyber world?
Yeah, come find me. Send me a friend request on Yelp. Let's be friends, shall we? I'm on Yelp. I'm Jeffrey S. You can find me at yelp.com/salt-lake-city. Just go to Yelp, and it defaults to wherever you're dialing
where you
in
are,
from.
Yeah.
Find me on Twitter at Yelp Utah. Follow us on Instagram at Yelp SLC. Facebook.com/YelpSLC. We're always out and about.
Doing events, doing cool stuff. New year, new exciting stuff for you to explore.
We got a lot of really, really fun stuff planned for this year.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Jeffrey. And let's hear what people out there have to think about the sushi. You can always email us and whatnot and see what. I'm sure there's favorites out there that we have not even found out about
yet. If you got a favorite little neighborhood sushi place, you get out a pad of paper and write us a
review
letter.
Review that mother. Send a snail mail
Send a
to
snail
Jeffrey
mail.
At
yeah,
Yelp.
No, get on Yelp, write a review, email, let us know, you know, what we missed, what we need, what we should be talking about. And as always, we'll look through those reviews on Yelp and talk about our favorites here.
Beautiful. Well, Jeffrey, we'll see you again in a couple of months or less than a month. Right in there. When will we see him again?
Let's do it.
Well, in a few select weeks.
That's right.
While we're talking sushi in this episode, one of the best sushi prep cooks in the entire Salt Lake City is Tommy Nguyen, who you might know works at Tekashi and also plays in Tol Chok Trio. The band disbanded just last year, but they were around for quite a while. They originally formed in 2000 and had a slightly ever-changing lineup, but it was primarily Oliver Lewis, Ryan Fedor, Tommy, and one Dan Thomas. Dan is now down in Southern California playing with the Joshua Payne Orchestra. The rest of the band members are still kicking around, working in the local food industry. I'm sure we'll hear more music from them eventually. They released three albums during their time together, Hello Bird, Ghosts Don't Have Bones, and Abalone Skeletone. This is a song from Ghosts Don't Have Bones called Hornets.
Anybody move?
Woodstock Trio have no website, of course, but you can read the band's obituary in the August 2013 edition of Slug and get on those archives at slugmag.com.
Plan B Theater Season of Merit continues with the world premiere of Clearing Bombs, running February 20th to March 2nd. Written and directed by Eric Samuelson, Clearing Bombs is a play about economics and defining the future amid mortal danger. Set in the summer of 1942, economists Friedrich Hayek and John Maynard Keynes spent a night on the roof of King's College Chapel in Cambridge, joined by a fire warden named Mr. Bowles, waiting to clear away and control German incendiary bombs. Details and tickets at planbtheater.org.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting January 21st. We are deep in the heart of the Sundance Film Festival, but there's lots of other great stuff going on. Let's start on Wednesday, January 22nd, when The Devil Makes Three returns to town. They've played a couple times in the past at the Stateroom. Now they're playing at the Depot. They're a really rockin' little acoustic three-piece. They play one of those things that I love so much, the musical saw, that you just don't see it every day. And granted, it doesn't come into every show, but let's hope that they bring it since they're playing on the big stage at the Depot on Wednesday, January 22nd. On January 23rd, Thursday, the Autumn Defense is playing at Valour in Provo, and they'll play on Friday at the Urban Lounge in Salt Lake City. For people who don't know, that's a couple of members of Wilco's band. Really cool indie rock guys, really worth seeing if you like Wilco. And even if you don't, go check out the Autumn Defense online. I think you'll dig them. I really do. Also Thursday, January 23rd, Mike Birbiglia is at Kingsbury Hall. You might remember him from his film Sleepwalk With Me that was at Sundance about 2 years ago. There's an interview on slugmag.com with Mike. Go check that out. And Orgon is playing at the Stateroom. Always a fine jam bandy hippie dance party. Really good time. They got some funk to them. Good stuff. Friday, January 24th, the return of Hell's Bells to Salt Lake City. That's the all-ladies AC/DC tribute band. They're playing a couple nights at the Stateroom, so check them out Friday or Saturday. And then the Page to Stage Festival is going down at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Saturday. That's also on Friday night and Saturday night as well. Great place to see new, exciting, dramatic works in Salt Lake City. On Saturday the 25th, you also get the classic ska sounds of The Toasters at Bar Deluxe. Great little venue to see a legendary band. And then on Sunday, January 26th, the Geek Show guys show up and do their movie night at Broovies. Always a great time. You can geek out with all your friends, make fun of some really cheesy flicks usually. That's your weekly daily calendar. You can always find more awesome listings at slugmag.com. And of course, if you're the kind of person who books gigs out there, you can add your events for free to those listings. And for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to that content. Wildcat Strike is a four-piece rock band from right here in Salt Lake City that originally formed in late 2011. They released their debut self-titled album about a year later, September 2012. This is a song called Beer Pressure from Wildcat Strike. For more information on the band, visit them online at wildcatstrikemusic.com. We are very happy to have our resident beers and brews expert, Mike Riedel, here in the Soundwave studio to give us the latest skinny on all the goodies coming along this winter. Mike, welcome, first of all.
Thanks for having me back.
Hope you've had a swell start of your winter time and holidays and all that and drank lots of unbelievably tasty stuff, I have no doubt.
Actually, I've been dry.
Dry! Whoa!
I had a little too much cheer over the holidays, so I'm drying out for a couple of weeks.
You're doing a little recovery so you can get into spring in fine form. Okay, let's delve in here. I know we're going to start talking a little hard cider, which are definitely getting more and more popular. You just notice that even if you don't drink them just by looking around. And
Right, and there are a couple of local options you can get. There's one made in Logan. There's a company up there that primarily works with honey vinegar, they've kind of did a crossover with ciders, and their honey that they use up there is called Kassir, and that is made up in Logan. And I believe that is making its way into state stores. I haven't had that one yet, but it's local.
Yeah, I like the sounds of it.
And it's a nice cider, and you should probably be buying it if you come across it. Closer to home, in Layton, there is the Hive Winery.
Yeah.
And they are making two ciders right now. They're making their regular Stinger cider, and they just released a raspberry version of that, which is the same Stinger cider with fresh raspberries.
Okay.
And that's a nice cider. It's not really fruity with the berries.
Yeah.
But it's
that's the risky part of these things, right?
And it just kind of hovers there in the background. It's quite nice.
Nice. We've had those guys on the show before. Knew they had a lot of ideas with some ciders, so that's pretty cool to see them coming to fruition, so to speak.
And if you do love ciders, it's probably a good time to be liking ciders, because for some reason Utah has allowed high alcohol ciders to be poured on draft. You still can't get high alcohol beer on draft, but right now,
yeah,
you can go into many bars. I believe Whiskey Street, I think the Beer Hive, they're gonna get it. Probably by the time this airs they'll probably be pouring it, and Piper Down.
Oh, okay.
Those are the ones I know of.
Interesting.
And this is Strongbow's cider. It's an English cider. This and wine are being poured on draft right now.
One of those liquor store or liquor law quirks that actually is good for us instead of the opposite, right?
It is. I don't know which way it's going to go. I don't know if they're, legislators coming up. Who knows? They could shit all over it.
Yeah, well, they might realize what they've done.
Yeah.
Hey, we can't have that. But
so, good time to be a cider lover, locally. So, get out.
Nice.
Try some ciders. It's definitely gets you out of your, when you're in that beer rut.
Yeah.
Cider's a good way to get out.
That's it, exactly. I'm trying to remember. I've had one semi-recently, and it was inspired by, I have a cousin back in Jersey who's making his own hard cider these days. He went from brewing beer to making cider just because, something different. So easy, right?
Yeah.
And so he got me kind of turned on to it when he was visiting here semi-recently, and I've had a couple ciders lately. Yeah, exactly. A nice change of pace if it's not too sweet or too
a nice dry cider. Yeah,
yeah, I like that. So it's kind of a nice change. So, well, excellent. Well, onward from ciders. Bohemian's got something good.
Bohemian's got a new seasonal out. It is a smoked Helles. Smoked beers are kind of difficult to get into for a lot of people, because if they're not done properly, you are just tasting a burnt beer.
Right.
So you need a subtle smokiness to the beer, and smoked beers have been around forever, and it was actually kind of an accident the way they came about. It's,
I was going to say, how do they do that?
When you're brewing 500 years ago, you're brewing on an open fire, and you get smoke, and some of the smoke
naturally gets
into your wort, and it comes through in your beer, and eventually you develop a taste for it because you miss it if you never had it, right? And this is a nice draft beer. It's got, like I said, the smokiness is subtle. It's not going to overpower. It's really unique. I think it's got kind of a almost a roast pork aroma to it. So if you're a big fan of barbecue, give it a try. It doesn't taste like like it, but it has this kind of.
I was going to ask. I don't think I've ever had a smoked beer. I mean, is it come through like a Scotch, the smoky flavor that Scotch has? Is it something like that?
Yes, you're going to get. You're probably going to get a lot of smoke in the nose, and you're going to get not so much in the flavor.
Okay.
But it's going to be there. It's going to be noticeable, and it just like Scotch.
Yeah.
If, when you have your first Scotch.
Some of them are really like, ooh, and some not so bad. So not bad, but just some more subtle than others.
And they're not the first ones to make a locally made smoked beer. Matter of fact, Uinta's got a smoked beer also on right now. It's called Tinder.
Hmm.
It's part of their Crooked line.
Yeah.
750 milliliter bottle. Try them both.
Yeah.
And see what you think, because they're both on the subtle side, but one tender is a little higher in alcohol. I think it's around 7% versus the 4% from Bohemian.
Is this something that breweries tend to put out in wintertime, or does that
matter? It's definitely a cold weather beer, yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And it's good to see more people doing it. Red Rock's done one. Desert Edge has done one. Man. So it's
the brewers like the challenge.
It's a nice
flavor,
trend.
Right?
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. And then Epic's Annex has some new stuff happening, too.
They're finally making beer there, which is nice.
On-site.
Yeah.
Excellent.
They've been making beer for a couple of weeks, and they've got three on right now. And their debut beer was a single hop golden ale. And their idea with this one is to change the hops up every time they make it. It's a small, it's like a 7-barrel system, so it'll go under 2 weeks.
Yeah. If
they got enough people in there drinking it, it'll be gone in 2 weeks. So every time you go in there, you got to keep your mind open to the possibility that the beer you had last week may not be the same.
Well, that's right. It pays to be a regular around there.
Yeah, and, exactly.
When you turn the tide.
And this is just hop profile. So you may have piney 1 week, you may have citrusy another week, you may have floral the next.
Oh.
And, you know, grassy, spicy the next. So you just want to keep that in mind.
I love that trend.
They also did a Saison, a little lighter.
Yeah.
More of a summer beer, but it's a very popular beer here.
Yeah, I'm sure people love it all times of year.
And, of course, a stout.
Yeah, gotta have a stout.
Everybody loves a stout.
Especially. But they'll probably have that year-round, too, I would imagine, popping in and out, yeah.
And that's one of the things they can do is they can make beer apart from Epic.
Yeah.
Still under that umbrella,
own,
but it can change, and they can do their own weird things
with it, like Epic does. Yeah, nice.
So that's look great. Forward to those and get over there and try some of those.
Excellent. And now we're finally getting to my hometown brewery up there, Roosters, Ogden.
Roosters got into the bottling game about a year ago. It's done pretty well for them. About 4 months ago, last summer, they came out with a version of their honey wheat that's been on draft there forever.
Yeah.
And they put that in a bottle, and that's just been walking out the door.
Nice.
And with the success of that, they have gone with the most popular style that you can get, IPAs.
IPA, yeah.
Everybody's got an IPA. You can't really be a brewery anymore if you don't have an IPA. So they've come out with their Hellevation IPA.
Wow.
This is a 7%. Basically, American style IPA. I know it's got Cascade hops, and I want to say Columbus. It's a pretty standard tasting American IPA. It's not too boozy. It's not gonna send you into the hospital.
Right.
But it's definitely not a draft IPA.
Right. Excellent. I'd love to see Roosters sort of making their way out around. If bottling makes that better, that's great.
It makes the brewers better.
Yeah.
And when the brewers are better, you're happier.
That's right. All of us get a little happier, right?
Everybody needs a happy tongue, right?
Excellent. That's right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming in and letting us know. Where can we find you, besides, of course, the pages of every Slug magazine out there?
Hit me up at Utah Beer Blog and participate.
Participate. Get in the conversation. Get the latest news as it happens.
The legislature is going to be coming up, which means a lot of liquor laws are going to get messed up with. And,
always, right?
And we're always getting crazy with discussions this time of year about it's more of a bitch fest.
Can you believe they're doing this? Yeah. Or, that makes no sense. What the hell?
So participate in our little bitch fest.
That's good. Well, change starts with people bitching usually, so that's a good thing. Mike Riedel, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves, and for all things Slug Magazine, be sure to visit us online at slugmag.com. We are in the midst of Sundance and Slam Dance, and we want to hear about all of your favorites that you've seen this year, or that you'll hope to see when they come out into theaters later. We'd like to know what you think, and we want to hear it via email at soundwaves@slugmag.com, or hit us up through social media on Twitter at Slug Soundwaves or facebook.com/Slug Soundwaves. We just might mention your suggestion on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Malin. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme song was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. The main logo and art design is by T-Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Tune us back in next week. We'll be talking to Liz Prince and Derek Hunter. Thanks for listening.